It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after this latest world news headline.
Another attack on civilians blamed on Boko Haram. Egyptians head to the polls today to elect a president. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Suspected Islamist gunmen opened fire Sunday at a marketplace in the village of Kamuya in embattled northeast Borno State, killing at least 20 people. According to a military source, gunmen shot villagers as they gathered to trade in the open-air market. One resident told the French press agency he's convinced the gunmen were members of Boko Haram. The group has claimed responsibility for last month's abduction of nearly 300 schoolgirls that has drawn international outrage. The abductions drew this criticism Sunday from Iran's president. Hassan Rouhani says the group boasts about the kidnappings, announcing it as their Islamic pride. The Iranian leader says they are treating young Muslim girls as slaves and promote what he calls the barbaric and foolish action in the name of Islam. The Iranian leader called Boko Haram ignorant and misguided people who have learned nothing from the Quran and have not accepted the way of the life of the Prophet Muhammad as their role model. Egyptians go to the polls today and tomorrow in a ballot widely expected to be won by former Army Chief Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. The former general who orchestrated the ousted controversial, democratically elected Islamist President Mohamed Morsi last July. Interim President Ali Mansour on Sunday urged voters to come out and cast ballots, saying they'll shape the nation's future. Heather Murdoch reports.
There is no doubt in the Egyptian capital about Abdel Fattah el-Sisi's popularity. Firecrackers go off in an area once populated by Sisi's opponents as crowds and a parade of cars bearing Sisi's posters and Egyptian flags fill the streets. Sisi supporters say their man is most likely to end the insecurity and choking economic problems that have afflicted Egypt since the revolution in 2011. Ahmed, a driver whose taxi displays a Sisi poster, says it is his patriotic duty to support the former military chief's presidential campaign. But on the other side of town, supporters of opposition candidate Hamdine Sabahi say the election is far more complex than that and far from over. Sabahi's supporters are not in the race to win. They want enough votes to make it clear to the government that Egyptians do not want to live under military control. Despite polls that show Sisi winning over 90% of the vote, activists say it is too soon to declare him the winner. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Cairo.
Libya's embattled parliament has given the country's latest prime minister a vote of confidence. Ahmed Mitig, backed by the Muslim Brotherhood, was initially approved for the post 2 weeks ago, although the vote was challenged by some lawmakers as illegal. His cabinet is to replace that of Abdallah El-Thani, who resigned last month for security reasons. Mr. Mitig is the country's fifth prime minister since Muammar Gaddafi was ousted in 2011. Legislative elections are set for June 20th. The parliament has been unable to meet since May 18, when an armed militia loyal to former General Khalifa Haftar attacked the parliament building, demanding its suspension. In South Sudan, the medical charity group Doctors Without Borders is trying to contain a cholera outbreak, as Mohammed Yusuf reports.
Brian Moller, head of the Doctors Without Borders mission in South Sudan, tells VOA that the group is providing assistance to the public health centers to treat the increasing number of cases. He says we are supporting the public health centers, the primary health centers around the town, in terms of training to quickly identify the cases presented to them and then send the patients to the centers for treatment. Moller says MSF has begun constructing a cholera treatment center in Gudela district, one of the areas most affected by the outbreak of the disease. In April, MSF vaccinated more than 10,000 displaced people against cholera in Malakal, Upper Nile State. The state capital has changed hands several times during more than 5 months of fighting between government and rebel forces. Humanitarian workers warn the situation is dire and may worsen as the rainy season hits. Hundreds of thousands of people in South Sudan are living in displaced persons camps, which are congested and lack clean water. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
In Djibouti, the European Union Naval Force and African Union Sunday condemned an attack the government says involved two Somali suicide bombers that reportedly killed three, wounded 15. Mali's defense minister says 50 soldiers died last week in a failed bid to wrest control of the northern town Kidal from Tuareg separatists. The army launched the assault after clashes broke out a week ago during a visit by Prime Minister Moussa Mara. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, May 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawi's Electoral Commission begins vote recount today, Monday, after discovering irregularities.
Obviously, the decision to go back to a recount does not favor everybody. So obviously, those who think that they have won the election would generally have the right to challenge the entire process.
Justin Zanzi is the chairman of the Malawi Human Rights Consultative Committee. Egyptians begin voting today and tomorrow in presidential election, where Army Chief Abdel Fattah el-Sisi is the frontrunner. South Africa has its first black finance minister, and the spiritual leader of Nigeria's Muslims calls for unity against Boko Haram.
He has assured the federal government of his own support as the leader of all Muslims in any meaningful effort to curtail the insurgency.
Kali Aliyu is the Secretary General of Jamaatul Nasri Islam, the umbrella group for Muslims in Nigeria. Djibouti launches an investigation into Saturday's suicide bombing on a restaurant frequented by Westerners. And Oscar winner Lupita Nyong'o is seen as inspirational role model. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Malawi's Electoral Commission will today, Monday, begin to recount all votes cast in last week's presidential, legislative, and local elections after saying it discovered voter irregularities in some parts of the country. However, outgoing President Joyce Banda stirred controversy after issuing an order to stop the vote count and called for fresh elections to be held in 90 days, citing voter irregularities. Justin Zanzi is chairman of the Malawi Human Rights Consultative Committee. He tells reporter Peter Clotty Mrs. Banda's order is unconstitutional.
I would say it sparked a lot of outrage. Outrage not only because it kind of exacerbated the anxiety that people have, but because it was also outright unconstitutional. The president does not have such powers to nullify elections. So it was met with a lot of outrage, I must say.
How are people reacting to the conduct of the Electoral Commission so far in administering this election, especially following some of the challenges they face?
Well, that would be a bit of a mixed bag, but I think it would be fair to say a lot of people are disappointed by the way the elections have been conducted. And the disappointment arises from the fact that this is the fifth time Malawi is holding democratic elections, and one would have thought that we have established an institutional capacity to deliver elections without any major glitches. So what has happened this time around is actually a strange development, given that we have a lot of experience in holding elections. And partly because of that, the results themselves have also sparked a lot of suspicion in terms of their credibility, because some quarters begin to believe that the challenges we have experienced have been as a result of a deliberate action or series of actions aimed at rigging the elections. So I think a lot of people have a lot of misgivings about the way the whole process has been conducted.
The Malawi Electoral Commission is supposed to begin a recounting of the vote starting Monday. Some political parties have expressed outrage. Is there any anticipation or concern about legal dispute about the credibility or the outcome of especially the presidential vote?
Certainly, there will be some legal challenges with the entire process, and I think that would stem from a number of angles. The first one is that obviously the decision to go back to a recount does not favor everybody. So obviously those who think that they have won the election would generally have the right to challenge the entire process. And then the other source would be the fact that there is no direct provision in the electoral laws that would permit the Electoral Commission to go back to a recount without a court order. So one would have expected that before going back to a recount, there should have been a court order directing that there be a recount.
Justin Zanzi is the chairman of the Malawi Human Rights Consultative Committee. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Lilongwe. Egypt's former army chief, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, is poised to win the presidential election, which begins today and continues tomorrow. El-Sisi's sole opponent is getting only single-digit support. But as VOA's Elizabeth Arid reports from Cairo, Sisi's once overwhelming popularity appears to be waning.
Egyptian presidential frontrunner Abdel Fattah el-Sisi rode to prominence on a wave of popular support for his role in ousting previous president Mohamed Morsi. He claimed the support of millions of average Egyptians who applauded his crackdown on Morsi's Muslim Brotherhood and held him up not only as Morsi's replacement, but as the savior of the nation. Yet nearly a year later, the political divisions of the Morsi era have deepened. The economy continues to sink. And Sisi, despite the backing of the military and most of Egypt's media, appears more vulnerable. Even his supporters acknowledge popular resentment.
I thought, I love this man. Why not get a picture of him? So I got it, but every time I go up in a building, I come back to find the picture shredded.
Syed, who prepares and delivers the popular dish kosheri on the streets of Cairo, remains a fan of the man he credits with keeping the revolution of 2011 on track. This despite Sisi's similarities to fellow military leader Hosni Mubarak, the target of that uprising. Syed is not alone. Sisi still pulls considerable support from women voters and others who pin their hopes on his promise of stability and eventual economic recovery. But the Sisi platform has been vague and his alienation of political opponents strong. Disillusionment with Egyptian politics and Sisi himself may keep some voters from the polls. Yet that doesn't mean they'll remain quiet forever, especially if basic needs are not met. Delivery man Syed, while counting on Sisi to lead well, has another take on the role of people power in making Egypt strong.
We need to work in order to make a living. We should not pray to God to send us dollars or gold. We need to work. We cannot sit at home and blame the economy.
Yet in a country with a long history of power concentrated in the presidency, it will likely still be up to Egypt's next leader to set the conditions for improvement. Elizabeth Arad, VOA News, Cairo.
The spiritual leader of Nigeria's Muslim community has offered to help the federal government in its effort to defeat Boko Haram. Mohammed Sahad Abubakar III, the Sultan of Sokoto, on Sunday reportedly told a gathering of Muslims in the capital, Abuja, that terrorism has no place in Islam. Khalil Aliyu is a secretary general of Jama'atu Nasri Islam, the umbrella organization of the Muslim community in Nigeria, of which the Sultan of Sokoto is the president. Aliyu tells me the Sultan also called on the federal government to address inequality towards Muslims.
While declaring the congregation for the national prayers from the Muslim side of Nigeria, he has assured the federal government of his own support as the leader of all Muslims in this prime moment of insecurity and insurgency, and that he's ready to cooperate in any meaningful effort to curtail the insurgency.
And so what sort of support is he willing to give the federal government? Because the problem here is that no one seems to know who is Boko Haram.
Well, support from the point of view of being the Sultan of Sokoto and that being the leader of the Muslims, meaning in terms of support in brokering peace, in talking, in really reach out. These are the aspects he's talking about because the government is the one that has the military and has the security and has the facilities and the equipment to be able to really face the insurgents. But from the point of view of cooperating, you know, whatever they want to know, whatever they want to ask, whatever assignment they want to give, that is within the confines of the Sultanate, will be able to do it.
In the past, there have been some allegations that perhaps some people in a hierarchy of the religion Islam in the north have been supporting Boko Haram. I'd like for you to respond to this criticism.
That is a fallacy. That is a blatant lie, and that is totally unacceptable from the Muslim leadership. How can that be said while right from the beginning of the insurgency, there are efforts been trying to reach out to debunk some of these hard attitudes they have taken and their theological understanding and doctrine, and from the point of view of even using Muslim scholars to teach and educate the general populace about the incompatibility of tilting towards that thinking.
So what does the Sultan think about the abduction of these Nigerian schoolgirls?
Well, it's really terrible. It is antisocial, it is inhuman, and it is barbaric, and it is ugly, and it is not even good to hear something like this happening.
The Sultan also, he's calling on the federal government to, at the same time, address issues of what he called inequality towards Muslims. What does that mean?
Well, it means from the point of view of having to improve the economy, having to give equal opportunity from the Christian and the Muslims in terms of appointments, in terms of employment, in terms of whatever. Now, when you look at even just recently, there's a federal government scholarship, about 109, all of them are almost Christians, and from the north, no Muslim was taken, despite the fact that we qualified. These are some of the issues he's raising. A government is supposed to be a government for all, without inclination to religion or tribe or section.
Kale Aliyu is Secretary General of Jemaah al-Nusra Islam, the umbrella organization for Muslims in Nigeria. He was speaking with me from Kaduna, Nigeria. It's Monday morning, May 26th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. The government of Djibouti says it is still investigating who was responsible for Saturday's attack by two suicide bombers on a restaurant frequented by Westerners in the capital. Three people, including the two attackers and a Turkish citizen, died. 15 others were injured, almost all of them Europeans. Ismail Waiz is an advisor to the president of Djibouti. He says the government is suspecting the Al-Shabaab militant group in Somalia.
The information we do have right now is that two people, a man and a woman, went into a private restaurant in the middle of the town, and they are responsible for this affair. Unfortunately, it affected a restaurant which is mostly visited by foreigners living in the Republic of Djibouti.
What do we know about the identity of these two alleged bombers?
We still have assumptions. And most of the people, they do believe that the people concerned might be from Somali nationality, belonging to the terror organization called Al-Shabaab. But we still are waiting also for the final information coming from the police and responsible people who are in charge of this investigation.
Al-Shabaab in the past has threatened Djibouti with attacks, but so far they did not claim this attack. What do you make of this?
We know the attack they did to the parliament of Somalia the day before, they also claimed it very promptly. But this time they are a bit silent. We do know that Al-Shabaab is the only terror organization which are very, very active in this part of our world. And we really do assume they have something to do with that. But still we are waiting, as I say, on the information coming from the ministries and responsible people who are dealing with this issue right now.
Is it confirmed that this was suicide bombing, or was it caused by grenades that were thrown in the restaurant?
Well, these were the suicide bombers. These were people who really exploded themselves.
Ismail Waiz is an advisor to the president of Djibouti. He spoke with Haroon Maruf of U.S. Somali Service. A South Africa analyst says the appointment of the country's first black finance minister is overdue 20 years since the beginning of a black majority rule. President Jacob Zuma on Sunday picked Mshlanhla Nene, the country's deputy finance minister, as part of his new cabinet. Political science professor Sheila Mintjes of the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg says Mr. Nene is a capable technocrat whose appointment the financial markets will be happy about.
Mr. Nene has been the second in command in the Treasury since 2008, And so he's a relatively obvious choice. It's very important that he has been appointed. He's the first black person to be appointed to this position in the Democratic era, which is now 20 years old, and it's really timely. He's very capable. He comes from some experience in public investment and in macro and microeconomics. So he's a good choice. He's been working very closely with Pravin Gordhan, who was the previous minister in the Treasury. And I think that certainly the markets will be happy that he's been appointed, because he's seen as something of a technocrat, so he's not going to rock the boat.
President Jacob Zuma was just re-elected. Prior to the election, people were talking about how there's been some dissatisfaction among blacks. Are we likely to see any economic transformation, a move towards some new development?
Well, I think the National Development Plan is, of course, at the top of the government's agenda. Now, this plan is not very popular with COSATU, who is the major ally of the African National Congress. So Zuma really has to tread a very careful path between the needs and interests of the workers on the one side, and on the other, of course, capital is very concerned to see some kind of stability in financial markets, and indeed in the mining sector, which is still suffering from this major strike in the platinum industry.
Earlier we were speaking and you described the appointment of Mr. Nene as a landmark appointment. So it's landmark because what?
I think it's landmark because he is the first black person to be appointed to the job. And I think there has been a sense up to now that the people who've been appointed to this job have been people who are sort of more sympathetic to the kind of overall macroeconomic planning that support capital rather than a kind of labor sympathetic approach. So what this minister has got to do is to steer this very delicate path between these two interests, labor and capital. And I think that if a black face is running the show, that's going to be much easier to do than if it were someone of a different hue, if I may say that.
Sheila Mintjes is professor of political science at the University of Witwatersrand in South Africa. She was speaking with me from Johannesburg. Lupita Nyong'o is an Academy Award-winning actress and fashion icon, recently named by People magazine as the world's most beautiful woman. Some are calling her the new It Girl, but for others, Nyong'o, who was born in Mexico and raised in Kenya, is an inspiration. Viewer's Mariama Diallo has more from Washington.
It's been a big year for 31-year-old Lupita Nyong'o. In March, she won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress for her role in the movie 12 Years a Slave, in which she played the role of a woman named Patsy.
It was a privilege, and I got to be in this kind of place of despair momentarily, you know, and in my imagination, whereas this woman actually lived these atrocities, and that always grounded me.
Nyong'o delivered a powerful performance. The film had a modest budget for a Hollywood movie and has netted huge profits. Then in April, a widely read U.S. magazine named Nyong'o 2014's most beautiful woman in the world. Young women like George Washington University student Danielle Noel are taking notice.
Well, first of all, I think she's a great representation of black beauty. She's also an important figure as a woman. I think that in terms of reaching for the stars, quote unquote, and, you know, putting your utmost effort and knowing that at the end of that, you can reap great benefits. I think that she's a great example of that.
Soon-to-be graduate Ronella Rosenberg is encouraged by how much Nyong'o has already accomplished.
She seems like she's a really good role model. Like, she's someone young, so more relatable, like, for someone my age, college age.
Nyong'o was born in Mexico, but her family moved back to Kenya when she turned one. She got her master's degree in acting at Yale University. It's not only her on-screen talent that has people talking, it's also her dazzling red carpet looks and fashion aura, says Adrian Seven Washington, who recently styled Nyong'o's hair for the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
She went from this really dark character in the movie to this really vibrant, beautiful, you know, shining bright like a diamond on the red carpet.
In an interview, Nyong'o says she once equated beauty with light skin, but has come to believe she, too, is beautiful. That has people like Ali Ibama glowing with pride.
Pride that the image of beauty has transformed to include someone like her. Beautiful chocolate skin of African descent. That is just, it makes me proud.
Nyong'o recently landed a contract with Paris-based Lancôme Cosmetics. Fans are eager to see what lies ahead for this rapidly rising star, who's also a writer, producer, and director. In Washington, Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa's Pulse, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with athletics. Kenya set the men's 4x1500-meter relay world record at the inaugural IWF World Relays at a sold-out Thomas Robinson Stadium in Nassau, Bahamas on Sunday. The quartet of Collins Cheboi, Silas Kiplagat, James Kiplagat Magut, and Ashbel Kiprop won in 14 minutes and 22.22 seconds. Ethiopia claimed the bronze medal. Early on Saturday, Kenya's Mercy Cherono, Faith Chepngetich Kipyegon, Irene Jelagat, and Helen Onsando Obiri set the women's 4x1500-meter world record in 16 minutes and 33.58 seconds. Kenya won the gold medal in the men's 4x800-meters and bagged a silver medal in women's 4x800-meters in an Africa record of 8 minutes and 4.23 seconds. Meanwhile, Nigeria clinched the bronze medal in women's 4x400-meter relay and were fourth in the women's 4x100-meter relay. Consequently, both Nigerian women relays have automatically qualified for the 2015 World Athletics Championships in Beijing, China. Kenya placed sixth in men's 4x200-meters in a national record of 1 minute and 22.35 seconds. Nigeria women were seventh in the 4x200-meters in a national record of 1 minute and 33.71 seconds. At the end of the event, Kenya is third with 35 points, Nigeria 10th with 13 points, and Ethiopia 15th with 6 points. Turning to football, in a Democratic Republic of Congo derby, TP Mazembe pipped AS Vita 1-0 in Lubumbashi in Orange Africa Champions League action on Sunday. Algeria's Entente Setif and Tunisia's CS Sfaxien drew 1-1. Egypt's Zamalek pipped Sudan's El Hilal 2-1, and Libya's El Ahli Benghazi edged Tunisia's Esperance 3-2. Meanwhile, Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel and Egypt's El Ahli drew 1-1, as did Zambia's Nkana and Ivory Coast's Sewe Sports in Orange Africa Confederations Cup matches. Cameroon's Cotton Sport edged Mali's Real de Bamako 2-1 as Ivory Coast's ASEC Mimosa and Congo Brazzaville's AAC Leopards drew 0-0. Finally, Ivory Coast and defending champions Equatorial Guinea drew 1-1, as did Senegal and Cameroon in African Women's Championship qualifiers on Sunday. Algeria edged Tunisia 2-1. Ghana beat Ethiopia 2-0. Zambia pipped Zimbabwe 1-0. Nigeria outplayed Rwanda 4-1, while South Africa overwhelmed Comoro Islands 13-0. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Yes, I'll listen to mail for this Monday morning, May 26.
I would like to put it clear to Abubakar, the Boko Haram leader, that he can force a cow to the river, but he cannot force it to drink water. Religion is a state of the mind and of the heart, and never a robbery issue, as he claimed to have converted the girl he has stolen into Islam. Let him release the innocent girl for God's sake, otherwise God's anger shall soon be on him. Allah, or God, is never a thief. St. John is here in Obaniku, Obudu, Cross River State, Nigeria.
And that's it for this Monday, May 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. I'm James Butte, Washington, saying have a lovely week.
Hello, I'm Sunday Shomari. This coming Monday on Let's Talk, mixed ancestry.
I really don't think there's anybody that's absolutely pure in that sense. It has to do with the evolution of human beings.
Mixed ancestry is a topic we'll discuss in our new lighthearted show, Let's Talk. So join me, Sunday Shomari, and my guests as we explore mixed ancestry with some hilarity. That's Let's Talk Monday, right here on the Africa Service of the Voice of America.
Hello,
I'm Douglas Mpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.